Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. On August 17th, 1959, Miles Davis made music history. That's when his album Kind of Blue was released. It's a landmark recording that became the best-selling jazz album ever. Novelist, journalist, and biographer James Kaplan is the author of Three Shades of Blue, Miles Davis, John Coltrane, and Bill Evans. Kaplan describes the album as the story of three geniuses, led by Davis, who joined forces to create one of the great classics in Western music. Beta's resident musicologist, Steve Gotcher, sat down with James to discover how these three cool cats collaborated to make this incredible album, which still reigns supreme 65 years later.
Miles was a complicated cat, you know, yes. He called himself the Prince of Darkness, and he turned his back to audiences. And there were times when he expressed his distaste for white people, which I think, given the America that he grew up in, may have been a fairly excusable venial sin. But there was a lot to Miles, and one thing that's important to know about Miles is that when it came to his music and came to his band, he was totally, utterly colorblind. He used to say, "I don't care if you're black, white, blue, green. If you can play, I want you."
In the summer of 1959, we saw the release of Miles Davis's Kind of Blue, which featured a bunch of great players, including Bill Evans on piano and tenor saxophone player John Coltrane. What brought these musicians together for this recording?
It was who brought them together. It was Miles Davis. Miles had an artistic temperament very similar to Picasso. He was restless. He was always moving on to the next thing. He couldn't stand staying in place. But like Picasso, he also had a great artist's sure feeling for how to place the various components of his art. Miles could listen to one player and think, "This is somebody I want to place next to my playing." There's a great story about Bill Evans, who came to New York City in 1955 from the hinterlands, a very young man, 29 years old, determined to make it in jazz or go home. And he played a lot of weddings and bar mitzvahs and dances. And he got a job at the Village Vanguard playing in between sets of the Modern Jazz Quartet. Modern Jazz Quartet were then superstars, and Bill Evans was nobody. When the Modern Jazz Quartet played at the Vanguard, the place went dead silent. When they took their break, everybody and Bill Evans started to play, because that was his job, play during their break. Everybody started, the dishes started to clink, the glasses, the silverware, people started talking. One night, while Bill Evans was encountering all this distraction while trying to play his beautifully subtle piano, he looks down at the end of the grand piano, and there, under the lid, are the penetrating eyes of Miles Davis. Miles is there checking out Evans, and a week later, Miles calls Bill Evans on the phone out of the blue and says, "Join my band!" And when Miles said, "Join my band," you joined Miles' band. Similar thing happened with Coltrane and everybody else on that album.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the studio session. What were they like? Were they doing improvisation, or were they doing written out pieces?
Miles was the great exponent of improvisation. And so he knew that the musicians he had hired for the Kind of Blue sessions were so brilliant that all he had to show them ahead of time was the tiniest little sketch of what he had in mind for each number. He would write out a couple of musical notes, just sketch them out on a napkin or a piece of paper, and say something to them a little bit about who would solo where, who would solo when, what the chord progression was going to be, and then they were off. And the jaw-dropping, astonishing fact about Kind of Blue, and we must remember what Bill Evans said, that no musician ever goes into a studio for a recording session on a Wednesday morning and knows he's going to make a great album. It doesn't work that way. These were two sessions in March and April of 1959. And the amazing thing is that Every full take on that album, except for one, was a first take.
Wow, that's amazing. How was Kind of Blue received when it first came out?
It was, Kind of Blue was received with a certain amount of puzzlement in many quarters. It was a brand new thing, a brand new sound. It was extremely quiet, but much too quiet for a lot of critics. There are a number of critics who said, this is pretty music, but it lacks force, it lacks power. It's not dynamic enough. We don't like it. But a couple of critics were astute enough to realize that this was genius, this was history, and this was an album like no other. It truly is an album that's outside of time.
When did Kind of Blue become recognized as the legendary album that it's considered to be today?
I think it took a few years. I think that sales were steady, but not gigantic. There weren't the initial big sales there had been for the Columbia albums Miles did with Gil Evans. Kind of Blue took a while to get its strong footing commercially. But then it just held on and held on and kept selling, first in gradual increments and then steeper increments, and has just continued to hold on to this day.
Why is it that you decided to focus on John Coltrane and Bill Evans in addition to Miles Davis for this book?
Well, after I finished the book before this, I had written a biography of Irving Berlin for Yale University Press Jewish Lives series. I needed an idea for my next book, and I went out to lunch with my editor at Penguin Press, Scott Moyers, and he proposed a book about Kind of Blue. My build on Scott Moyers's, on my editor's idea, was what about the book about the three, arguably the three geniuses of Kind of Blue? That's Miles and Coltrane and Bill Evans. What about them as men and musicians before, during, and after the making of this timeless album? There were six musicians on Kind of Blue. So there were Miles and Coltrane and Evans. There was also Cannonball Adderley. And there was Paul Chambers on bass, a great bassist. And there was Jimmy Cobb, the drummer. And Jimmy Cobb was an excellent jazz drummer. But I think an argument can be made, and I hope I made it in my book, that if there were any geniuses on that album, it really was those three men and great artists. And they were all equally troubled artists throughout their lives and at various points in their lives, junctures in their lives, passages in their lives, extremely troubled. All three of them for years, respectively, were heroin addicts. Right. And Evan stayed an addict to the end of his days.
So after Kind of Blue, Miles Davis and Bill Evans and John Coltrane all headed in different directions and had great solo careers. Where did John Coltrane take his music?
He took his music to the outer limits of the universe. And within, I think it was just about 3 weeks after the second and final session for Kind of Blue, that Coltrane went and recorded Giant Steps, which was exactly what the title says. It was a giant step ahead for the tenor saxophone, for jazz itself, and for Coltrane. Coltrane, like so many players, like so many horn players, like so many saxophonists, suffered for years under the titanic and diabolical influence of Charlie Parker. Charlie Parker, the greatest saxophonist to ever live, was also the biggest heroin addict in jazz. And so many jazz musicians suffered this terrible illusion that if you want to play like Bird, you have to do like Bird. And they took up the drug, and it killed a lot of people. It almost killed Coltrane, but it didn't. He had to find his own path after imitating Charlie Parker. He had to not imitate Charlie Parker and find his own way, and he did. Coltrane had a way of taking chords and finding parts to chords in jazz that nobody had ever thought of before. Coltrane found new notes to play, and new astronomical heights to take his playing that even left a lot of jazz musicians behind. There were people, a lot of people grew very impatient with Coltrane, but Coltrane had an artistic path. He had a trajectory, creative trajectory that was very steep, very difficult. After A Love Supreme, which is such a masterpiece, he began to explore these interplanetary realms with his saxophone. And Coltrane was just on his own path. And it was not a function of selfishness. He was an explorer, and he took the art farther than anybody had before him.
Wow, yeah. And what about Bill Evans? He took a different tack.
Well, a lot of people complain that Bill Evans didn't go very far artistically. I think that's not true. One of the wonderful interviews I got to do for my book was with the great young pianist, composer, a brilliant man named John Batiste, who for a while was the band leader on the Colbert Show. John Batiste has tremendous respect for Bill Evans and felt that in many ways Bill Evans went farther than Coltrane or Miles. Bill Evans continued to play in the trio format for the rest of his short career. He played beautiful, 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 very subtle music, highly influenced by the Western classical moderns. Stravinsky, Ravel was a huge influence on Bill Evans. He had incomparable touch, incomparable subtlety. I think that his touch and his subtlety were vitiated in his later years by his switching from heroin to cocaine. Suddenly a pianist who had always slumped down low over the keys to coax the most subtle sounds out of the piano was sitting bolt upright and playing a little faster. Arguably, that was the influence of cocaine.
And then Miles Davis seemed to take probably the most experimental path. At least he changed his styles from album to album until he got to very electronic music. How does his career progress?
He incorporates a lot of the quiet that he found with Kind of Blue, but then he picks up electronic instruments. He becomes more and more compromised physically. The trumpet is an extremely physically difficult instrument to play. He became more of almost like an impresario or a conductor than a player among players in his later albums. He switched from trumpet to electronic organ, electronic keyboard. And so he, in a lot of his concerts in the 1970s and 80s, he would play mostly keyboard and maybe an occasional single note on the trumpet. It was experimental, but it was also necessary given his physical limitations. You had albums as varied as In a Silent Way and Feed to Kilimanjaro and Jack Johnson and On the Corner. Miles was fascinated by rap. Miles loved Sly Stone. He loved Prince. He wanted to forge artistic alliances with these great young artists. Miles saw the future.
Now, if you had the power of being able to see into the future, how do you think people are going to look at Kind of Blue in 2059?
2059, 100 years. Well, 2059, that's not that far away. It's 35 years from now. So I think it's going to continue on its timeless path. I think that as long as people are listening to music, as long as there is music, there will be Kind of Blue. It'll be a record that moves listeners as much 50 and 100 years from now as it does today.
James Kaplan, thank you so much for joining us today and for your excellent work on Three Shades of Blue. It's a fantastic look at the making of one of the greatest jazz albums ever.
Steve, thank you so much. It was a great pleasure talking with you today.
James Kaplan is the author of Three Shades of Blue, Miles Davis, John Coltrane, and Bill Evans. Steve Gotcher talked to him. Find out more about James and Three Shades of Blue at wpr.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Paul Scheer, Mateo Escarapur, and James Kaplan.
They have a lot of zany stuff on this program, don't you think?
Beta is available to follow on Spotify or wherever you catch your favorite pods. Don't forget to offer a rating or share with new alphas. You can keep up with us during the week online at wpr.org/beta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic.
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
Make fun of me all you want. I'm in peak performance mode.
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
You know, I do talk a lot of smack, guys, but it's only because I can beep, beep, back it up.
And thanks to you, our alphas. More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
I love it. I'm a king there. They love me.